They were funny, smart, and wise. Today we'll talk about how twin sisters from Sioux City, Iowa transformed the world of advice columns and shared their views with millions. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Pauline Phillips, known to the world as Abigail Van Buren, passed away last week. We lost her twin sister, Esther Lederer, better known as Ann Landers, in 2002. Today, we're going to talk about these remarkable women. I'll talk with Elizabeth Marcourt, who's teaching a class on advice columns. I'll also talk with Bruce Miller and Lynn Zerschlin from the Sioux City Journal and Grace Linden, curator at the Sioux City Public Museum. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Abigail Van Buren and Ann Landers were the most famous names in advice columns for decades. Their real names were, of course, Pauline Phillips and Esther Lederer. Pauline passed away last week at the age of 94. We lost her twin sister, Esther, in 2002. They came from Sioux City, Iowa, where they're still known as the Friedman Twins. This hour, we will talk about their lives and their legacies, and we want to hear from you as well. If you were a regular reader of either one of the columns, tell us why. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. What advice stays with you? Did you ever write one of these women a letter? Let us know. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start the hour focusing on the legacy of these two remarkable women. With me now is Elizabeth Marcourt. She's the editor of FamilyScholars.org and director of the Center for Marriage and Families at the Institute for American Values in New York City. This semester, she's a lecturer in American Studies at Lake Forest College in Illinois, and she's teaching a course called American Advice, Bedroom to Kitchen. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
What made you want to teach a course about advice columns in America?
You know, my colleague, Siobhan Maroney, we are team teaching it, and she's a politics professor at the college, and we're friends. And we wanted to do this kind of interdisciplinary look at what is this thing called advice. You know, it's kind of all around us. It has a deep legacy in the human experience from the wisdom literature and traditions that go back as long as we have, you know, a written human record. And we have extraordinary sort of American figures like Dear Abby, who we'll be talking about today, who shaped us. And yet, you know, what is happening now? Are people still going to the same kind of advice, sources of advice? How are people getting their advice? What is, you know, how does advice both reflect and shape social change? Are there power structures in the advice literature, you know, around us? And we wanted to kind of just probe these questions with students at Lake Forest College. And the course is underway, and we've got some great discussions already.
Well, let's go back before Abby and Ann. What were advice columns like before the 1950s?
You know, you had some, they've often been, you know, it's often about the domestic world or the private world, the world of women. And so you see sources of advice earlier, maybe in cookbooks or in advice written to young women about how to have a family, you know, how to raise their family, or the very earliest sort of fashion magazines, Godey's Ladies Book and all that, that really started kind of, you know, with the spread of literacy and the availability to people of these kind of written sources. And then, of course, you have, though, outside of the domestic sphere, you know, Ben Franklin was a wonderful dispenser of advice having to do with thrift and financial well-being and everything else. He's kind of an expert on everything. And so we have, in some ways, one of the things we're exploring in this class, it's called American Advice, is there something distinctive about advice in America, the sense that a lot of people, you know, were far away from their families, they were immigrants or brought here against their will, but for whatever reason, far away from their families, had to make it on their own. And the sense that we have also that we have some class fluidity and the ability to rise above where you were started out. But you need advice on how to do that. You need to know, which spoon do I use? How do I, you know, you need a Dale Carnegie to tell you how to win friends and influence people. So is there something distinctive about advice in America is a question that we're exploring. And I think perhaps there is.
Well, and I want to talk about this time in the 1950s because these twin sisters sort of sprung onto the scene in the 1950s. Esther Lederer, she started her advice column, Ann Landers, in 1955 at the Chicago Sun-Times. And then her sister, a year later, picked up the pen name Abigail Van Buren and started writing on the West Coast in the San Francisco Chronicle, the Dear Abby column. What made these different? Because they really did kind of change the face of advice columns.
Well, I mean, everyone will have their own interpretation. I'm sure your listeners will as well, because we all grew up reading these women, and we almost I feel anyway that I had, you know, it's kind of a personal relationship you feel you have with them. I remember I was about, you know, from age 9 or 10, I grew up in North Carolina and reading the Winston-Salem Journal. And I'd read the funnies and then Dear Abby and Ann Landers, and then eventually started going to the editorial page too. And I kind of credit that whole experience with what made me a writer later on. So I think there was a way that they were so, in a sense, ahead of their time. Dear Prudence, who the column at Slate, which is written by the journalist Emily Yaffe, she had a wonderful obituary about Dear Abby last week. And one of the things she said is that Dear Abby was both a creature of her era and really reflected her era, but also was ahead of her time in her kind of witty, pithy statements that were almost kind of well-suited for a Twitter age. You know, she would come back at people with a 4 or 5 word response that was just hilarious and so true. So I think there was a way in which there was just a lot of power in these twin sisters. When you read their obituary of Pauline Phillips in the New York Times and just see the story of, you know, their father was an itinerant chicken seller who rose to become, you know, a theater magnate. And these young women were very ambitious and made it.
They both had very different styles. Ann Landers would give sort of detailed advice, those longer answers. And as you just mentioned, Dear Abby, she would often give you the one-liner, the sort of pithy response, although not that they weren't wise responses in some ways. But sometimes in reading Dear Abby, I feel like some of the advice that she was given wasn't meant for the person who actually wrote her the letter. And that makes me wonder about this role, because, of course, they were read by millions of people. And they were answering the letter of just one person. What was it about these answers that made so many people want to read them?
There was a way in which they were there was something they were doing that I'm not sure we'll ever see again. You know, that phenomenon of having an audience of tens of millions of people around the world. You know, so they knew that they were writing for, as you say, all those readers in responding to that one letter. So their column was, it wasn't just dispensing advice to one person. It was also entertainment. It was public education. It was they were social leaders, you know, using the mechanism of advice to point the way forward. And it's one of the things that you really have to look at, you know, what will happen next. One of the things we did yesterday in our class was ask the students, you know, where do you go for advice now? And where do you think people will in the future? And, you know, the students, they're roughly 20-something. You know, they go to YouTube channels to look for their questions on how to, you know, get into college or how to do on your first job interview. They go to Yahoo Answer forums to post a question or see what other people are saying. They might source opinion on Facebook, but they like the internet more for, like, things that are sensitive or where they want to be anonymous. And that there's a lot of strengths in that model, but it's kind of like all other aspects of media now as well. We're sort of losing that communal, you know, we all watch the same 3 networks and are kind of engaging with the same stories that we talk about. And in that sense, too, we're also kind of losing that communal, you know, these great figures like a Dear Abby or an Ann Landers who sort of told stories that all of us wanted to read, whether it was for voyeurism or to learn something or to get advice about our own situations. It's hard to see where that's going to happen again in the future.
In preparing for this course, have you given thought to the people who wrote to these columns? I often wondered in reading the columns about those people, how writing to someone far off in a newspaper that may or may not ever answer your letter seemed like a good solution to a problem.
Mm-hmm. We have wondered about that. You know, who asks for advice and who asks for advice in this kind of way? We did a little show of hands in a classroom, and among my professor and myself, have any of us written to an advice columnist, and actually none of us had. So we've all grown up reading these, but none of us had actually written to them. And so we wonder, yeah, who is the kind of person who decides to write a letter to an advice columnist and why, you know? And also that, what does it mean to ask for advice versus to give advice? You know, there's a power relationship there as well. And is that perhaps changing now in an era in which now, you know, there's tons of advice columnists still, but it's more segmented. So you can, you know, you can post a question on a, you know, message board on the internet. But is that the same kind of thing as writing to the great Dear Abby?
When you look around the world of advice columns now, I mean, you mentioned there are lots and lots of places to get advice, although there are still the advice columnists, whether they write for an online publication or whether they write for an actual newspaper. We've got Ask Amy. We've got Dan Savage. You know, we have still Caroline Hacks. We have really high-profile advice columnists. How do you think the world of advice dispensing in this way has changed?
It seems that you kind of... there's less of a monolithic voice, so you know if you want a really harsh, tough answer laced with some profanity that's going to shock you a little bit, you go to Dan Savage, you know. And you know if you want something kind of sexually open and frank but, you know, still pretty tame, you go to Carolyn Hacks. And if you want a really wise big sister, you go to Dear Prudence, you know. So you there's these sort of – there's more segmentation in the market, and you can sort of decide what kind of voice you want to engage with by going to those, you know, which is a good thing and maybe not such a good thing. I mean, we have more diversity and pluralism in the voices available in the media today, but also, you know, these people like a Dear Abby or an Ann Landers who were, you know, my colleague, Professor Maroney pointed out, kind of barometers of social change. You know, they wrote for so many decades for so many people, and you saw them engage with the great, you know, social movements and changes of the second half of the 20th century, whether it was, you know, women working outside the home or acceptance of divorce or, you know, how manners changed or, you know, sex education entering the schools. And then these women in some ways started out on many of these questions more conservative and became more liberal on them over time, sort of driving social change, but also reflecting it. And it's hard to say that as good as some of the advice columnists today are, it's hard to say that they have that kind of primary role in shaping and reflecting the culture.
Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elizabeth Marquardt is a lecturer in American Studies at Lake Forest College in Illinois this semester. She's teaching a course called American Advice, Bedroom to Kitchen. She's also director of the Center for Marriage and Families at the Institute for American Values in New York City. In a moment, I'll be talking with Bruce Miller and Lynn of the Sioux City Journal, also Grace Linden, curator at the Sioux City Public Museum. That's Lynn Zerschling. I'm so sorry about that. I'll talk with them in just a moment, a typo on my piece of paper. And we want to hear from you as well. Did you ever write to Dear Abby? Did you ever write to Ann Landers? You read their columns. Why did you keep going back to them? Let us know. 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about the remarkable lives and the legacies of two remarkable women, Abigail Van Buren and Ann Landers. That's how they were known to the world. Of course, they had real names as well. Those were their pen names, Pauline Phillips and Esther Lederer. They were twin sisters from Sioux City, Iowa. And now I have a number of people from Sioux City on the line with me. Bruce Miller is here from the Sioux City Journal. Hi, Bruce.
How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's great to be with you. Pauline, Esther, and Esther Pauline were their real names. So they shared names. Isn't
right.
that strange?
That is unusual. Lynn Zerschling is also here. She's a columnist at the Sioux City Journal. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, glad to be here. Yeah, Bruce is right. In Sioux City, they were not known separately. They were known as the Friedman twins, Friedman being their last name. So you couldn't talk about one without the other.
And are they still called the Friedman twins in Sioux City?
By those of their generation or perhaps a little younger who either grew up with them, because obviously their colleagues would be in their 90s now.
Right.
There are not too many around. But still in Sioux City, many people call them the twins. I think Bruce would agree with that.
Yeah, they were called Epi and Popo.
Right. And Epi was for Esther. Popo was for Pauline. And they were called that since they were kids growing up on Jackson Street in Sioux City.
They certainly had more names than most people.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to keep them straight sometimes.
Absolutely. I'm going to bring Grace Linden into the conversation as well. She is curator at the Sioux City Public Museum. Hi, Grace.
Hi there. How's everything?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And Grace, let's do a little bit of history.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about the twins' parents, because they were immigrants from Russia, right?
That's right. Abe and Rebecca were their names. They started in Russia, realized that the Jewish population was not being treated very fairly, decided to get out when they could, went to China for a while, and then ended up in America in the early 1900s. By 1910, they had settled here in Sioux City. Abe was a businessman. He had a grocery store in several locations in Sioux City, and then he got into buying and operating theaters in downtown Sioux City. And by 1926, the whole family, which had moved around a lot in Sioux City, ended up at 1722 Jackson Street. The house is still there today. And that was about four blocks to Central High School, where the twins would go to high school through and graduate in 1936.
Well, and when you say Central High School, that means a whole lot to everyone in Sioux City, Iowa. But maybe you should describe Central High School for those of us who are not from Sioux City.
Well, it is a large school. It looks like a castle built in the 1890s. It did close in 1972 as Sioux City gained three new high schools. But at the time, it was called Central High School because we did have East High School also out in the Morningside area of Sioux City. But it is a very large school, very large auditorium. It had been added to over the years. So they had a great upbringing right here in Sioux City.
And they were born in 1918. They were born, of course, on the 4th of July.
Yes. And then they announced their engagement on July 2nd. I don't know why they didn't wait till July 4th, but they had a double ceremony, too, in Sioux City.
And they weren't the oldest children in their family, right?
No, they had older sisters, Helen and Dorothy, but they were the young ones, and I guess they were considered spoiled a little bit, but they got along in school with everybody, and everybody wished them well when they went off on their careers.
And they went to Central High School, and then they stayed in Sioux City for their college careers as well, right?
Yes, they did go at least 3 years. They did not graduate. They came back to Sioux City, had honorary degrees in later life, but they did marry in 1939.
All right, and when they were at Morningside College, they both started writing.
Right. There was a Morningside College newspaper column called The Campus Rat, and you weren't supposed to know who was writing the answers, so they had a pen name called Peep, P-E-E-P, and that was for their first and middle initials of the two girls together. So they wrote the column together, and nobody was supposed to know who they were, but I think they figured it out.
were the girls well known in the community even before they became world famous?
Well, as their high school classmates and college classmates would say, that they were just into everything. They joined a lot of different organizations. Nothing got done unless the twins were behind it. They just had a lot of energy, and everybody liked them.
All right, and Bruce, you wrote a blog post about both of them, but I mean, particularly about Pauline. But you described her as being somebody who could just light up a room.
They were both like that. I'll tell you, they were different. I think, you know, I must be the last person in the world who remembers both of them, because it seems like, you know, so many people have died who are their contemporaries. But one was more motherly, and one was more businesslike, if that makes any sense.
Okay, well, then tell us which one was which.
Abby was more like your mom, and she would be very kind of folksy. She would call out of the blue. I would be sitting at work one day, and I'd get a call from Abby, and she'd say, "Well, how are things doing in Sioux City?" And she really wanted to know. Whereas with Anne, she was a little more businesslike, and you had to go through the proper channels if you wanted to talk to her.
Well, and that seems contrary to the impression I would have gotten from reading their columns, because Anne just seemed so much homier and kind of cuddlier.
But, you know, Anne was one who had a lot of catchphrases. Remember, wake up and smell the coffee, those kinds of things. and I think she was really looking for an international profile. She was really interested in being the friend of the presidents and friend of the, you know, the religious leaders. And she was always talking about the people I go to for my counsel. Whereas Abby was more gut instinct and was more homegrown advice, if you know what I mean. And I think there was you could see a real difference in them. And it doesn't surprise me that they did have a dispute in their lives.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because Grace just mentioned they had a double wedding with a large number of rabbis. I mean, it must have been quite the affair. But they did have a falling out with each other. Did the falling out happen after the advice column started, which was another 16 years down the road?
That kind of started it. But, I mean, you know, they were always friendly on a public surface level. You know, if they were together, they were always very friendly toward each other. They would talk about each other. But there was this kind of tension behind the scenes, if you know what I mean. And Anne was the first one to start the column. Abby came along, and I think it seemed a little too easy for everybody. It seemed like, well, now she's falling into this business. Wait a minute. Anne was the one who started all of this stuff. But she was a more natural advice giver. And I think that really bothered her sister, who felt like she really had to research everything.
Interesting. And what were their...
I was just going to add that Anne always claimed that there was never a fight, never a disagreement. But my mother, who also worked at the Journal for many years, knew from Abby that there had been a falling out and that Anne was irked that Abby all of a sudden came along a year after her and started writing a column and maybe grabbed some of the limelight. It never came out in public, however, because they wanted to make everything seem great. And in later years, when they visited Sioux City together, they acted like they always did, you know, joking, feisty, funny, arms around each other, hugging each other. So I don't really know, you know, if they still had some things behind the scenes in their later lives. They never talked about it publicly if they did.
Did your mom know them? Well,
my mom knew Abby better than Anne. My mother grew up in Sioux City, was only a couple years older, knew a lot of the same people. As Bruce can probably tell you, the Sioux City Journal just did the Dear Abby column for many years. So Abby was back more often in the 1950s and 60s to visit Sioux City, get honorary degrees, gave keynote speeches, and she also would call my mom out of the blue like she did Bruce just to chat, find out what's happening, because mom knew some of the same people. And mom did not know Anne as well until after her column began in the Journal, and she did talk to her a few times, but she did say if you wanted to interview Anne, you had to go through her staff, whereas if you called Abby, you could get her right on the phone just like that.
Interesting. Well, and Bruce, can you tell us what's behind that? Why on earth did Dear Abby run in the Sioux City Journal and Anne Landers did not for so many years?
We chose Abby. Abby was the one we wanted. I have no clue why she was the one chosen. But it came around to the time of a class reunion, and Anne was just mortified that she wasn't in her hometown newspaper. And so she called the editor at the time and said, "What do I have to do to get my column in your newspaper?" And he said, "Give it to us for nothing." And she said, "Done." And so for years, we ran both Anne and Abby in our paper. We paid for Abby, but we didn't pay for Anne.
Oh, and you wonder why there was a feud.
But they were both in there. I don't know how many newspapers can claim that they had both Anne and Abby, but the hometown girls, they were in our paper.
Oh, that's really interesting. And, you know, Lynn, I would love to hear, did your mom share her opinions? Your mother was a pioneer journalist. I mean, there weren't a lot of women journalists at this time. And, of course, Anne and Abby were pioneers in their own field, although they kind of stuck with a more traditional woman's role. Did your mom have opinions about that?
She thought they were great, and one of the reasons she thought that is that as advice columnists, they kind of broke the mold from the old sob sister type. You probably talked about that earlier, but she felt that they not only brought attention to a lot of issues that hadn't been discussed, but she thought they brought attention to Sioux City because both the twins were very positive about Sioux City, their upbringing, where they got their values. And when they came back, they remembered who people were. They didn't have to be prompted, oh, that's Joan so-and-so from Central High or Morningside College. They remembered names. They were good at that. So So when they came back to Sioux City, they had friends here that they sometimes visited individually, and no one knew they were in town, we later found out. They really did. They have some cousins that lived here. So I really think my mother thought they were good role models.
And now, Abigail, I'm so confused about their names. Pauline, she started writing for the San Francisco Chronicle. Did she stay in San Francisco? Did she stay in that area as she aged?
Bruce, didn't she eventually move back to Minneapolis after she developed Alzheimer's?
Yeah, no, I don't want to say that. Because I would always call out to California, and I think Jeannie lives out in California. That's the daughter who's taken over the column.
Right, Jeannie Phillips.
Yeah, and
Jeannie Phillips,
You know, I don't know what happened to her after the illness, because she really did disappear. She was not in contact after her daughter took over the column. Now, Jeannie would call, too, so it's not like, you know, she isn't following along in her mom's footsteps. But, yeah, I don't know where she was cared for or what happened in those later years.
All right. And Ann Landers started out in the Chicago paper. Do you know, I mean, where has she been based, or where was she
Chicago.
Based?
Chicago. She's always been in Chicago, at the Chicago Tribune.
All right. That's interesting.
Right. And I was just going to say that her daughter, Margot, Bruce has interviewed Margot Howard, who, although didn't continue the Ann Landers column, I think she at least
she's
at the
writer.
Time did a blog. She's a writer, and she wrote a book about her mother.
Right. She's lots of fun. She, you know, she tells more about the family than Mom ever would. And she'll address those kind of issues that people want to know about the feud, for example.
Interesting. And Grace, since the sisters did leave Sioux City, was there any, it sounds like they were good about being true to the city that they came from, and it sounds like people in Sioux City still felt like they had ownership of them.
Oh, sure. They came back as early as 1957. Abby was asked to be keynote speaker at her Morningside College alumni event. But if there was anything going on within the family, they had a wedding of a niece one time. They asked all the reporters not to interview them, that this was their niece's big day. She was getting married. They didn't want to be in the news. They wanted the niece to have all the glory for her wedding time. But they would come back. They talked to many groups in the area. The Plymouth County cattle feeders. I mean, it's just amazing the types of groups. Kiwanis Club here in Sioux City, Planned Parenthood, Midwest Conference. So they came back to talk to groups and to talk to their family. Like I said, there were cousins, aunts, and uncles here. So they did want to come back. They did want to see them, but they didn't always want to be the center of attention.
Interesting. Well, and Bruce, when you talk about them, you're calling them Abby and Ann. Is that how they went? Did they go by those names?
Sure. That's how they were known on a public platform, and that's how you'd address them when you talked to them, too. I don't know that I knew them on a level that they were Epi and Popo to me. I think that's more of something that the friends would call them when they were kids. But they had such an identity as Ann and Abby that that's how people knew them, and they accepted that.
Well, you wrote that you met Ann when you were in college. How did you meet her?
You know, the strange thing was, it was like, and I've done so many celebrity interviews over my career, and it was just so happened that the school newspaper assigned me to go and talk to Ann. And she was the first, as I see it, first celebrity, if you will, that I interviewed. And she struck me as such a force. She was just this whirling dervish. And I thought, wow, that is somebody. I had no clue that it would ever tie up, that I would someday be living in the same town that she grew up in, or that I would ever have any kind of relationship with her and her sister later on.
Wow.
But it was really fun because I think she's a great inspiration. And she is one of those landmark women in journalism that you look at and you say, you know what, she did blaze a lot of trails for people.
And then how did you meet Abby?
Abby was after I got to the Journal. Of course, now we're going back to 1979. It was just a regular thing. And like I say, I had her home phone number. We would talk on the phone every once in a while. She'd ask about things in town. I think she felt that I was a safe person to ask about things. And she'd say, how's the Green Gables? And how's this? And how's that? And
the Green Gables, probably the most famous restaurant in Sioux City,
they
I would
love
say.
To go there. And, and she'd throw things out. And it was like really, it was like having an old friend who wanted to know how her hometown was. And I guess I felt I filled that need for her as I answered questions for her. But, I never asked her for advice. Sadly, I probably should have done that at some point and said, can you give me some advice for a change? But very friendly. She was like somebody that you knew for years. And she'd always give you a big hug, and she'd always leave by saying, make sure you tell all my friends hello.
I think I have some connections to Sioux City. My mother grew up there, and my grandparents lived there. And my grandma used to love to talk about Anne and Abby, and I got the feeling that she kind of lived vicariously through them. And I think maybe a lot of women in Sioux City did. What do you think about that, Grace?
That would be something to assume. And like I said, the classmates, everybody, were so thrilled with their careers. Nobody was jealous. Nobody said, oh, they took off and never came back to Sioux City to see us. So, no, I think everybody was very, very glad for what they did in life and were always pleased to have them come home.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back to talk more about Dear Abby and Ann Landers in a moment. I'm talking with Grace Linden of the Sioux City Public Museum and Bruce Miller and Lynn Zerschling of the Sioux City Journal. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the lives and legacy of the Friedman twins from Sioux City, Iowa. Abigail Van Buren, also known in real life as Pauline Phillips, and Ann Landers, also known as Esther Lederer. Pauline passed away just recently, last week at the age of 94. Esther died in 2002, but they did change the world of advice columns back in the 1950s and were both incredibly popular for decades. This hour, we're talking about their legacy, and we want to hear from you as well. Were you a regular reader? Why? Which one did you like better? Did you ever send a letter to Anne or Abby? We want to hear your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this email from Jane in Ames. She said, since the recent death of Pauline Phillips, I've not seen or heard anything in the media about the current Dear Abby, Jean Phillips, Pauline's daughter. I continue to read her column every day in the Des Moines Register. Apparently, the current Dear Abby has chosen not to write in her column about her mother's passing. What are your thoughts? And Bruce, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, and you know, those columns are done, you know, weeks in advance, so there may still be a tribute to her. So I wouldn't presume that it's, you know, we're not going to hear anything from her about her mother. But she is a different woman. She's not the same woman as her mother was. And so, you know, maybe she has different tactics, but I still think she'll talk about mom at some point. There's always a good tribute column there.
Well, and she did co-write it with her mother for many years and then took over the column, right?
Right, right.
But some fans kind of feel like they never got a chance to say goodbye when the first Dear Abby stopped writing.
You know, though, I think we'll always have them with us. Because we have their writings. You can go back and look at all those things, and the advice still holds up. So I don't think we ever lose them. So saying goodbye, that sounds so final. I think we'll always have Ann and Abby with us, even though they're not writing every day.
Well, and Grace, you kind of broke down the stuff that they wrote about into different categories. What did you see as the major things that showed up in their columns?
Well, Abby, for instance, said her made three ideas for columns because of so many questions were marriage, no guidance for young people, and romance. So those three things people asked about all the time. She always had to write back to them. But there were problems that people had that she couldn't even handle, and she always said that she would send those on to the best people if it was for unwed teenagers having babies. She would send them on to unwed mother homes. If it was people having a religious problem, she'd send them on to clergy. So it wasn't like she could answer every question, but she did get help from a lot of different people.
Sure. Well, and between the two of them, the sisters were getting 15,000 letters a week.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine what a crush of mail that must have been. And it must have been difficult to decide what they were going to answer. Lynn, do you know how they made those decisions?
I really don't. I know that I think they had some staff that would maybe forward the most interesting ones. And my understanding is both Abby and Anne actually selected the letters that they would answer. Bruce, is that your understanding?
Yeah, and, you know, I think they wanted a mix, so it wasn't the same thing over and over. They had a little variety in all of there. I always loved when Anne would say, well, she thought it was Yaleys who were trying to prank her. You know, when there'd be something like, what is this? I can't believe this is a problem. And she would just call them out right there in the column. So it was kind of fun to see, you know, a little feistiness in her writing.
Well, that brings up a question that I brought up earlier in the hour. But reading these letters that they receive, often I have thought to myself, what would make someone write a letter to Dear Abby or Ann Landers? And did they have thoughts on that, Bruce? Do you know?
Well, yeah. I think when you have nowhere to turn. Now, think about the time when they started. In those days, would you go and talk about your problem, your personal problems? Now, everything with Facebook and Twitter, they put everything out there. In those days, it was very guarded if you had a problem, and you had nowhere to turn. Here, it was anonymous. It'd be like going on the Internet, and you could write a letter, and you trusted these women because they had some kind of, as you would think, experience or some knowledge that you didn't have. And so if you're sitting somewhere in the middle of the country, you don't want to go to talk to a minister because you're afraid that minister might talk, or you don't want to go to your doctor because you're afraid of what he might tell you. You go to somebody else, and that somebody else was Ann and Abby.
Well, and sometimes I thought about how lonely the people who wrote some of the really heart-wrenching letters must have felt to be driven to the point where they had to write one of these letters.
Yeah, it's nice that we had that. I don't know if we would have created them if they didn't exist. But it's nice to know they were there. Now, times have changed. And like I say, kids today, they pour everything out on the Internet. And so I don't know if they had that kind of bottled up inner feeling that a lot of them relied on Ann and Abby for.
Well, I think, too, this is Lynn, that some of the people that wrote, whether it's about their personal lives or marriages or homosexuality or religious issues, they didn't feel safe talking about these issues to their family or friends or clergy, and yet they could write Ann or Abby and feel like they could get an answer. I think Bruce is absolutely correct. Back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, people didn't have the outlet they do now through social media or, frankly, just putting it out there, because celebrities now their whole lives are an open book, so a lot of people feel the same way, I suppose.
Yeah.
But both of them, you know, relied on experts to get answers, as Bruce had mentioned, whether it's psychologists, doctors, religious leaders, and so forth.
They weren't judgmental either. I think, you know, if you look back, they're going to be seen as very liberal women in terms of the things that they were telling people. And they weren't judging you based on this is what I believe or this is my own prejudice in this whole thing. They would make sure they were coming at it from a more, if you will, scientific or logical standpoint. They had the backing behind them. They talked to people who knew what they were talking about.
Well, and that talking to people who knew what they were talking about, that kind of brings me to another question that I've always had is, what makes someone qualified to be an advice columnist?
Lynn, I found some things that was in the newspaper columns in the past where they said that they just used plain old horse sense or common decency and kindness from their upbringing here in the Midwest, that their roots here gave him a strong sense of ethics and honesty. And that was their claim to fame, that they had that within them, that was innately born in them because of their Midwestern roots.
And Lynn, you wanted to add something too?
Well, add to what Grace said, I believe both of them had said their parents were great influences. I believe their dad was often asked for advice. I think it was their dad, who was the businessman, and they would listen to what he would tell other people. Their mother was a great person to volunteer, you know, fed people that were hungry, that showed up at the door during the Depression. So they developed an empathy for other people just by watching what their parents did. And I think some of that is innate, but some of it, I think, rubbed off on them.
I wonder if their big sisters were good at giving advice, too.
Actually, they told my mom that it was Helen Brodkey and Dorothy Rubin. Dorothy lived in Palm Springs, and Helen lived in Omaha. They had the big jewelry firm there. But they said they never gave their younger twins advice. That's what they told mom, because they wouldn't listen anyway.
Interesting. You can join our conversation. We're talking about Ann Landers and Dear Abby today. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Bruce, how do you think they stayed relevant for so many decades?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, they were always current with events. It wasn't like, you know how some people get old before their time because they just kind of stop? And these two women were always at the cusp of everything that was going on in the country. I think their readers helped them in that respect. They kept them abreast of what was going on, and they knew how social things had changed in our country. And they were asking questions just as the rest of us were, but they were going to the experts in the field.
And what do you think about that, Lynn? How did they stay relevant?
Well, not only what Bruce said, but I think it was because they had an interest in people. Wherever they went, they wanted to know what you were doing or what your background was. It wasn't about me. It was about you. And they knew how to listen. And more than that, I think they were talented journalists in the sense that they knew what questions to ask. And then they listened.
Grace, did you want to weigh in on that, too? Do you have a thought?
I did read somewhere that they always said that the problems of the 1950s are the problems of the 2000s. Again, going back to the three biggest things they had to deal with, marriage, no guidance for young people, and romance. I mean, those things are going to be forever on people's minds, and everybody needs help, generation after generation.
So the more things change, the more things stay the same.
That's it's keeping right. up with the Kardashians.
And they probably did. If they were around now, they would probably
they
be
would
on
have
their
words.
Shows.
They would have words for the Kardashians. I know they would.
I'm sure
yes,
that's
and
true.
And it probably would be a zinger, too.
Right.
Are there any columns that kind of stand out in your minds that are some of your favorites? And I'll put you on the spot first, Bruce.
Well, we all remember the one where the lady with all the answers has no answers. And that was one that Anne wrote when she got divorced. And, you know, at that time, divorce was not as prevalent as we see it today. And so it really was, is this a blow for her career? Will we see what, you know, if she can't solve her own marriage problems, how can she help other people? And I think that was a real landmark piece of work, not only in her career, but in journalism in general. And, yeah, that's one that really stands out, and that was Anne.
Well, and it's interesting because they did have pen names, and they did dispense advice, and you mentioned Anne particularly had catchphrases, and Abby had those one-liners, but they did manage to be real people, too.
Right, and I think that's where we didn't give them enough credit for having real lives. I think we wanted them to be on a certain platform, and we wanted them to be the ones dispensing advice to us. We didn't realize that they also go through the same things we go through.
How about you, Lynn? Do you have a favorite memory?
Well, I think that one, but I don't know if I can pick one out, but I do remember reading a column that Abby wrote, and I don't know what year. A lady wrote that her daughter-in-law had been married in, like, say, January, and 5 months later she had a baby. And so the lady wanted to know, how can the baby be this big and that early? And she wrote, "Dear Wondering, the baby was on time, the wedding was late. Forget it." So in other words, she wasn't above telling people, you know, some things aren't worth worrying about.
Nice. And Grace?
I've just been reading some one-liners, like you said, that Abby handed out, and a girl wrote in that it was her boyfriend's birthday coming up, and she just didn't know what to get him, and what did Abby think she should get him? What did he really want? And Abby wrote back, "Never mind what he wants. Get him a tie." I guess that was all she had to say.
That's all she had to say. You know, many times, you know, they were obviously the speakers at various events because people wanted to hear what they had to say. And once in, I think, 1986, Ann came back to Sioux City to introduce the president of the University of Notre Dame, Father Theodore Hesburgh, I believe, at an event. And she didn't like it that reporters were focusing on her. In other words, she kind of let it be known to myself and others, you go interview Father Hesburgh, it's not about me. So they weren't always wanting to be in the limelight, yet she came because she was a personal friend of his and was proud that he wanted to speak in Sioux City. So,
but as a reporter, right, Lynn,
yeah.
As a reporter, I'll bet you had a hard time with that, though, because I would imagine she was the more interesting story.
Well, from the standpoint of, you know, the hometown girl doing it, well, I managed to get a story out of it, but it was sort of like out of a 5-minute conversation because she really did not want to talk to us. And there were other times when they did, but this was a time when no, go talk to Father.
Right. So
You know, they were not very tall, but they were dynamos. I mean, they could get that fire in the eyes, and so you got the message.
Has there been a real outpouring in Sioux City over the past week?
Well, most people that were contemporaries, unfortunately, have passed on. There are a few that still remember them. I interviewed a woman who's 93 that went to college. They were a couple years ahead of her. And, you know, she didn't really stay in touch with them through the years. I don't think a lot of people did. But I think people in Sioux City or maybe in northwest Iowa or this area still feel a special bond because they were so well known, yet they made sure that they were back in Sioux City and Sioux City was important. So I think maybe there was like a feeling of an extended death in the family to some degree.
And Bruce, you're pushing for a statue or something.
Something needs to be done. I can't believe that our town doesn't recognize them in a larger respect because they really were two icons in their field. And the idea that they came from here and they never forgot us is something that should be remembered somehow. I don't know if it's a statue. I don't know if it's some kind of, if their house should be preserved. I don't know what it is, but I do think we need to do something. Maybe it's a typewriter. We need to have a gold typewriter somewhere that's in their honor. I don't know, but I really wish we would.
Well, and Grace, at the museum, I'll bet you have some mementos.
Well, we do have a few things, mostly archival photographs, newspaper clippings, but we do have an exhibit in our permanent gallery that talks about Ann and Abby and their influences on the world and that they were from Sioux City. And we are now getting artifacts from people. They're just walking in with them, and we didn't even know that they existed. So once we gather enough of them, there may be a temporary exhibit coming up. We just don't know for sure yet.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I've been talking.
Thank you. It was fun.
Oh, thank you, Lynn. I've been talking with Lynn Zerschling, columnist for the Sioux City Journal, Bruce Miller, also of the Sioux City Journal, and Grace Linden, curator at the Sioux City Public Museum. This hour, we've been remembering Dear Abby and Ann Landers. They started their lives as Pauline and Esther Friedman, twin sisters born on the 4th of July in Sioux City, Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Dear Abby, dear Abby, my feet are too long. My hair's falling out and my rights are all wrong. My friends, they all tell me that I've no friends at all. Won't you write me a letter? Won't you give me a call? Signed, Bewildered. Bewildered, bewildered, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood.
dear Abby, my fountain pen leaks. My wife hollers at me and my kids are all freaks.